Macho, macho man. I've got to be a macho man. Macho, macho man. I've got to be a macho man. And this isn't goodbye, America. I'm just going to say, see you in court.
There will be a smooth transition to a second Trump administration.
I will totally accept the results of this great and historic presidential election if I win.
One of the great features of America is that we have political contests, that they are very hard fought, as this one is hard fought. And once the decision is made, we unite behind the man who is elected.
I have no bitterness, no rancor at all. I say to the president, as a fellow politician, that he did a wonderful job.
Mr. Nixon has won. The democratic process has worked its will. So now let's get on with the urgent task of uniting our country.
Congratulations on your victory. I hope that in the next 4 years, you will lead us to a time of peace abroad and justice at home. You have my full support in such efforts.
The president asked me to tell you that he telephoned President-elect Carter a short time ago and congratulated him on his victory.
The people of the United States have made their choice, and of course I accept that decision.
He has won. We are all Americans. He is our president, and we honor him tonight.
He will be our president, and we'll work with him. This nation faces major challenges ahead, and we must work together.
There is important work to be done, and America must always come first. So we will get behind this new president and wish him well.
I have said repeatedly in this campaign, the president is my opponent, not my enemy, and I wish him well, and I pledge my support.
This is America. Just as we fight hard when the stakes are high, we close ranks and come together when the contest is done.
But in an American election, there are no losers, because whether or not our candidates are successful, the next morning, we all wake up as Americans.
Whatever our differences, we are fellow Americans. Please believe me when I say no association has ever meant more to me than that.
I so wish that I had been able to fulfill your hopes to lead the country in a different direction, but the nation chose another leader, and so Ann and I join with you to earnestly pray for him and for this great nation.
We must accept this result and then look to the future. Our constitutional democracy enshrines the peaceful transfer of power. And we don't just respect that, we cherish it.
I will totally accept the results of this great and historic presidential election if I win.
In a concession speech, we're being told he wrote himself. Let's listen in.
Unbelievable. My fellow Americans, we won, everybody! We won! Listen to the lying enemy media and the stupid Green Party. I'm still president.
He refused to concede. He unilaterally declared victory like a king or a crazy person or a king who's gone crazy.
It's been 3 weeks, and President Trump has still not conceded.
Protests outside the White House entered their second month with no end in sight.
We're now on day 77 of the White House standoff.
It was an unprecedented constitutional crisis.
And then, for the last time in our history, cooler heads prevailed.
My fellow Americans, and by Americans, I mean only the people who voted for me. I'll never concede. Concession speeches are for losers, and I'm no loser, folks.
I beat myself in the general election, which is practically impossible. I'm a winner.
This is a total disgrace. I disavow this election. I'm staying right behind this desk no matter what. You can't replace me, and definitely not with a woman. Me too? What about me? I'm being evicted like a South African farmer. I won the popular vote. This is white genocide. White genocide. I'll call the Electoral College. They like me. Where's the nuclear football? Give me the nuclear football. What's the number? 867-530. Wow, a truck. Wow.
And that's how the Trump presidency came to an end. And then things got really weird.
Thanks for the song this week from Bill
Conti, Glenn Miller, and Golden Earring.
And thanks to
Rod Serling, Rudy Giuliani, Cartman, Richard Nixon, Anthony Atamanuk,
and
Peter Groves,
The Gay Show,
Joe Biden, Selena Mayer, Amy Bruckheimer,
and
Ben Cafferty, J.L. Corvin,
our
cartoon
president,
Alec Baldwin,
and
Mike Pompeo.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
It was the year of our Lord, 2020. The same year a flattened Earth sojourned a record 694 days round a yellow star. It was the year a young man, wizened beyond his years by mafia trials, scotch, and motorboating, answered his nation's call for one final, fatal act of insanity, while plutocracy itself teetered on a knife's edge, poised to fall into the infernal bog of self-determination the Greeks called democracy. He was a child of the law, inside and out. Born in a flatbush log cabin to a humble mob enforcer and mob enforcer's wife, he grew up with an almost biblical reverence for family, especially extended family. He was a man who held court as lord of a defunct Dutch hamlet, a man who dispatched bannermen to gentrify his fief at the business end of a billy club, a man expelled from the landed manse financed by his subjects in the hopes he would leave them alone. By the time of the Second American Civil War, he was already a grizzled veteran. 34 tours in the Ukraine, bombardier at the Bowling Green Massacre, runner-up at the Bedminster Bedlam. But it was not until the monkey business of Manhattan that he truly revealed himself to his countrymen. For when waylaid by harriers sprung from ambush, he fought his way to safety modestly armed, with naught but his John Thomas to hand. Unchastened by phallic Pyrrhic victory, he spun his grandiloquent Sturm und Drang to rally a people to maybe certain victory. Salt of the earth people, flyover people, the same people he had cajoled a score earlier to care, however briefly, about New York fatalities. Military historians to this day cannot explain the choice of so overachieving a mind to select the high ground for his last stand in the parking lot of a gardening concern wedged between a crematorium and a purveyor of silicone orifice implements, and a Norse peyote speakeasy, a Pentecostalist clown college, an unsolvable Scientology escape room, the strip mall church of Hastur, the incomparable immolator, the ladies' auxiliary of the Knights of the Nickelback Hijra, an oxide orange Gran Torino abandoned in 1974, a tutoring center for octogenarians failing Marcel Proust courses at Temple University's extension program, and an Arby's. It was to be his finest hour.
So they're reporting that we officially lost Arizona. What a disgrace. Okay, first of all, I'm glad I lost it if they care so much about their fake hero. You know, Cindy McCain, you weren't even John McCain's first wife. Who knows how many wives he had? Not as many as me, though. Not as many as me. And, you know, if they care more about John McCain, who did nothing, and his old wife, who's not looking so hot these days, then they can keep him. They can have that, you know? That's why the only McCain I respect is Meghan McCain, because she's got very large breasts. I'll say it, and I'll say it again. I can respect the view I like is the view of her cleavage. That's the only respect I'll give John McCain, okay? I'll give the devil his due, you know? But, no, Arizona, they're obviously a very stupid state. You know, Arizona State, I'm sure they all voted for Sleepy Joe. They're all too busy majoring in Flat Earth and Instagram to have any brains. I think the admissions rate at Arizona State is like 103%. It's a total joke. So that's what I think of the whole state. I think the whole state is Arizona State. So if they want to honor the McCains and, you know, get free college credit from Starbucks, remember when that loser was giving them Arizona State credits? They can keep it. They can keep it. We still are going to take Pennsylvania through lawsuits. We're going to take Georgia. And, you know, we'll challenge many other things. But Arizona, total pathetic state. You know, it's sort of like, and I'll say this, and this is tough, but this is true. It's like Florida for even stupider people, okay? So enjoy your desert, Arizona. You're like old, stupid Florida and less fun than Nevada. So, which, by the way, after they gave their votes to Sleepy Joe, we now call Nevada the N-word state. But we're going to win. We're going to fight. We'll see what happens.
On November 3rd, President Donald Trump was asked to remove himself from his place of residence. That request came from the American people. Deep down, he knew they were right. But a crippling fear of inadequacy would never allow him to acknowledge defeat.
We did win this election.
When incoming President Joe Biden took up residence on January 20th, he found his desk occupied by a sloppy orange goblin.
Let's do that over. He's coughing in the middle of my answer.
Yeah. Donald Trump is a disaster.
He was always known as a dummy, and now he's a dummy and a half.
Can two old men live together in the White House without driving each other crazy?
Will you shut up, man? Listen,
this is a fraud.
The Fraud Couple. Thursdays at 9:30 on ABC.
Yeah, for some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
This is Tom Rowe in Acre with the week in local news from WGXC's newsroom at WGXC.org. Click there for more information about any of these stories. And the biggest story of the week, of course, was the coronavirus outbreak and pandemic that has increased in cases to record numbers throughout the capital region and upper Hudson Valley.
The new explosion of cases in the coronavirus crisis. If you heard this, the U.S. reported a record-shattering number of new infections.
For the first time, all 50 states report an increase in cases. Shocking 7-day averages in Kansas at 41%, Iowa at 48%, South Dakota at a astonishing 54%.
New restrictions are about to go into effect in New York State. Beginning tomorrow, all bars and restaurants must close for dining at 10 p.m. Gyms must also close at 10 p.m. And all private gatherings must be limited to 10 people or less.
Numbers that haven't been seen since May have returned as area hospitals are full, and there have been recent outbreaks and cases at local schools, in local businesses, at election sites and in local restaurants, while the four biggest locations of coronavirus have been at the Green Correctional Facility in Coxsackie, at the nursing home in Ghent and the other nursing home in Rensselaer County, and at the University of Albany. But even with the record number of cases higher than in the spring, government officials have taken almost no action to stop the spread of coronavirus. This month, Governor Andrew Cuomo announced that bars, restaurants, and gyms must close at 10 p.m. to in-person services. Albany Med stopped visitation this week, and Columbia Memorial and Hudson had stopped it on October 30th. And though Ichabod Crane and Hudson schools had cases this week, they took little action, while federal officials have taken no action recently to stop the spread of coronavirus. The other major story this week was the counting of ballots, as only about 80% of New York ballots were counted in the hours after the polls closed on November 3rd. About 20% were mail-in ballots still to be counted. Lawmakers in Albany talked about changing that the next election and having absentee counts start on election night. Amanda Fries is reporting for Capital Confidential that State Senate Deputy Majority Leader Michael Giannis, November 10th, announced legislation that would allow absentee ballots to be counted on election day. Currently, state election officials are unable to open and begin counting absentee ballots until a week after Election Day. Quote, there is no good excuse for election results to continue to be up in the air weeks and months after people have already cast their votes, unquote, Giannis said in a news release. Quote, our Senate majority will continue to do the work of improving our election processes to ensure everyone has easy access to the ballot and election results are clear and timely, unquote. Under his proposal, the counting of absentee ballots would start 3 hours before polls close on Election Day or at 6 p.m. The ballot envelopes would be examined for validity at the time of their arrival to the local boards of election. Senator Dave Carlucci, Democrat of Rockland County, said, with absentee voting now more than 25% of the total vote, the state must update how mail-in ballots are handled and counted. Quote, the fact that we cannot call local races until weeks after Election Day is obscure and confusing to the public, unquote, he said. Quote, now we need a political interpreter to tell us who might have won and who has a chance, unquote. Read more about this story at Capital Confidential, a Times Union blog. Another story this week that affected many localities, including Queemans, Ravenna, New Baltimore, Coxsackie, Bethlehem, Voorheesville, Athens, and Catskill, was about the Champlain-Hudson Power Express transmission line. Sarah Trafton is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the Coxsackie Village Board November 9th granted access for the Champlain-Hudson Power Express. The project, proposed by Transmission Developers Incorporated, is a 333-mile underwater and underground electric transmission line that will carry 1,000 megawatts of renewable energy from Canada to New York City. The $3 billion infrastructure project will be privately funded. The transmission line will pass through the village of Coxsackie on Bailey Street at the railroad tracks, Mayor Mark Evans said. Quote, I believe they're going to bore it all, so the impact is even less overall, unquote, Evans said. The mayor also pointed out that both the village and the school district will gain some tax revenue from the project. Quote, it will be a very minimal impact, and we get some money from it, so that's even better, unquote, Evans said. The energy will not be distributed to the local community, but we don't get anything here, unfortunately, unquote, he said. Quote, that's the only bad thing. The lines will transport hydroelectricity through several local municipalities, including Queemans, Ravenna, New Baltimore, Coxsackie, Bethlehem, Voorheesville, Athens, and Catskill. The project developers have received permits from the State Public Service Commission, U.S. Department of Energy, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is expected to begin construction in 2021. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And finally, some groups in Columbia County talked about partnering to work on the housing crisis that's been apparent in this area for a long time. Too many people are not able to afford housing locally anymore, and that's only been made worse by the coronavirus pandemic. Natasha Vaughn is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the Columbia County Department of Social Services has partnered with St. Catherine's Center for Children, the Legal Aid Society of Northeastern New York, and Columbia Green Continuum of Care to expand housing services and support for residents affected by COVID-19. The initiatives are funded through a $253,000 grant from New York State through the Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance. About 27.6% of Columbia County residents in Columbia County rent their home, according to a 2019 State Comptroller's Housing Affordability Report. The median rent in Columbia County is roughly $886 per month, and the median renter's income is just under $35,000. Quote, housing has been an issue for many, many years, and COVID has really just increased the threat people have around becoming homeless, unquote, Hudson Third Ward Supervisor Michael Comedia said. Quote, this is a collaborative response with multiple agencies in the county working together to try and address and ameliorate this problem, unquote. New York State imposed a moratorium on evictions in March, which prevents landlords and property owners from evicting tenants who have been impacted by COVID-19. The moratorium expires January 1st, meaning tenants can once again be evicted if they cannot pay their rent. The need for legal and housing assistance is expected to increase over the coming months. Quote, the economic impacts of COVID-19 have particularly impacted those at risk of homelessness and the working poor, Columbia County, unquote, Columbia County Social Services Commissioner Robert Gibson said. Quote, this program will help alleviate some of those stresses and keep people housed, unquote. Read more about this full story at HudsonValley360.com.
Let's go. Just sit right back and you hear a tale of a fateful trip that started from this tropic port aboard this tiny ship. The mate was a mighty sailing lad, the skipper brave and sure. Five passengers set sail that day for a 3-hour tour, a 3-hour tour.
Well, that just happened. That smoosh up was created by Little Roger and the Goosebumps back in 1978.
Our objective today is nothing less than the genesis of a living human brain. Keeping in mind that bold revolutions in art and science most often result from the creative synthesis of seemingly unrelated or even profoundly incompatible materials and ideas. For example, on this side of the equation, a bowl of mashed potatoes, in this case, Idaho tubers. Mashed potatoes are among the few organic substances to effectively mimic human brain matter in, let's get it off there, consistency, density, and critical mass. Also a very pleasant aroma. And on the other side of the equation, I've prepared a
This is Echo. You are listening to WJFC Agra, Creative Community Magical Radio.
The Radio Witch Moon Hotline is a recurring broadcast series
created by Jess Spear, Wave Farm's 2020-2021 Radio Artist Fellow. Spear writes, quote, "We are constantly surrounded by waves, vibrations, transmissions, traveling invisibly through and around us and carrying messages, information, 24-hour news feeds, talk shows, rock shows, data streams, conspiracy theories, sad songs, bad songs, operating systems, all of them whizzing around us. How many bummer vibes have passed through your home today, even without being picked up by a receiver? This is your chance to participate in a counterspell and leave good vibes. Call in at 518-302-6067 to be part of the Radio Witch Moon Hotline broadcast at 3:30 p.m. November 15th at WGXC. Again, that number is 518-302-6067. Call in with your good vibes and hear them on the radio 3:30 p.m. November 15th at WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Paul and Liz of Kinderhook, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Like good old tap water. Just turn it on and get it.
German measles. Russian flu. Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes?
Tomorrow, I'll take a look at swine flu. Up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
You have tuned into the River Newsroom's Hudson Valley Coronavirus Report from Lissa Harris of The River and Roger Hennigan-Gilson of The Other Hudson Valley. Go to theotherhudsonvalley.com or therivernewsroom.com for more information and links to the stories included here. This report is a collaboration with several Hudson Valley journalists, airing on WGXC 90.7 FM at midnight, 5 7 and 9 a.m. and online in the audio archives at WGXC.org. La Voz, a Spanish language news magazine covering the Hudson Valley, is translating these roundups and co-publishing them on its website in Spanish at lavoz.bard.edu.
On November 13th, President Donald Trump broke a week-long public silence to hold a press conference in the Rose Garden, where he threatened to withhold a coronavirus vaccine from the state of New York. Trump's comments were aimed at Governor Andrew Cuomo, who has been a vocal critic of the White House's plan for vaccine distribution, as well as the administration's efforts to interfere with decision-making at the FDA, the agency that regulates all vaccines and pharmaceuticals. Quote, "As soon as April, the vaccine will be available to the entire general population, with the exception of places like New York State, where, for political reasons, the governor decided to say, and I don't think it's good politically, I think it's very bad from a health standpoint, but he wants to take his time on the vaccine," unquote, Trump said. Cuomo promptly fired back on CNN and MSNBC, accusing the president of wildly misrepresenting his stance on the vaccine effort, while New York State Attorney General Letitia James vowed to sue the Trump administration if New York sees a delay in vaccine access. Trump will not be president in April, of course, barring the overturning of the U.S. system of government as we know it. New York Times took an in-depth look at this week at Pfizer's plans to distribute the vaccine. Federal distribution plans for the vaccine have been a key target of Cuomo's recent attacks. And the governor has said that the White House plan will leave low-income communities of color behind. The fact that the Pfizer vaccine is currently the front-runner complicates the picture. The company refused to take federal money from Operation Warp Speed to develop the vaccine, leaving it in a more independent position than other vaccine makers. Pfizer intends to take charge of much of its own complicated distribution, although they plan to work closely with
Operation Warp Speed, and with state and local governments to get that vaccine to the general population. In late October, New York State quietly put out a report on its pandemic rent relief program intended to prevent evictions and help low-income renters who are struggling to stay afloat through the pandemic. It took a while, but the report is now making headlines. Curbed writes that the program was a bust, reaching only 15,000 people and putting only $40 million of the state's $100 million program funding toward rent relief. The problem is that eligibility restrictions were so tight that most of the 94,000 people who applied to the state for relief were turned away. Quote, the result was a program that provided help for an excruciatingly small slice of New Yorkers. More than 1.3 million statewide are at risk of eviction when the true need is staggering, unquote. Curbed writes. The city, a New York City-based digital news outlet, is looking to get in touch with people who sought help from the program. Dinner parties and casual game nights are currently driving much of the U.S. COVID-19 transmission, the Washington Post reports. Contact tracers are now tracing cases back to small private gatherings, as larger ones have been scaled back. COVID-19 is increasingly being driven by a form of spread that is almost impossible to detect or enforce against. Quote, the kitchen table is a place of risk, unquote, said Nirav Shah, director of Maine's Center for Disease Control and Prevention. New York's new prohibition against multi-household gatherings of more than 10 people in a home goes into effect November 13th, joining neighboring states that have already instituted such bans. New York City schools are on the brink of shutting down again as the city's positivity rate nears a 3% threshold for closure set by city officials this summer after intense negotiation with teachers' unions. Epidemiologists increasingly agree school is not as dangerous a setting as, for instance, indoor dining. Some public health experts are asking why we are closing schools and keeping indoor dining open. The answer might make sense from one angle. Restaurant workers don't get paid when restaurants close, while teachers can still work remotely. But it isn't being driven by science. The governors of six northeastern states, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, and Vermont, will meet over the weekend to attempt to coordinate their response to the pandemic's second wave. The governors will discuss expanding restrictions on businesses and gatherings, as well as possibly coordinating on travel restrictions, Governor Cuomo said November 13th. We need to look beyond beds. Healthcare workers are burning out as the nation's third wave of cases overwhelms hospitals in many places. The Atlantic's Ed Young reports in a sobering feature story, quote, the most precious resource the U.S. healthcare system has is in the struggle against COVID-19 isn't some miracle drug, it's the expertise of healthcare workers, and they are exhausted, unquote, Young writes. Public health policy expert Diana Mason, a Catskills resident who hosts a health-themed radio show on Roxbury's public radio station WIOX, writes for the Journal of the American Medical Association that with cases on the rise, it is time for the medical profession to grapple with tough decisions about rationing care. The state's chief administrative judge called off the convening of all new juries and grand juries starting this coming Monday, November 16th, and grand juries on pending cases will continue to meet. More than 130 Secret Service members are currently infected with COVID-19 or quarantining due to exposure at various Trump campaign events, the Washington Post reported on November 13th. Quote, the virus is having a dramatic impact on the Secret Service's Presidential Security Unit at the same time that growing numbers of prominent Trump campaign allies and White House officials have fallen ill in the wake of campaign events where many attendees did not wear masks, unquote, the paper writes. The state's new limits on household gatherings, restaurants, and gym hours went into effect November 13th. Beginning November 14th, you'll no longer see toll booth workers on the thruway. But that's not because of the pandemic. Rather, the state has completed a three-year, $355 million project to transition the superhighway system from toll booths to an entirely cashless payment system. The completion date of the switchover had been thrown up in the air by the state's budget deficit this year due to the pandemic. At least 5 million fewer people will travel this Thanksgiving in the United States, according to AAA. The number of travelers on the road is expected to drop more than 4%. The number flying is expected to drop more than 47%. And the number traveling by other means, such as train or cruise ship, is expected to drop more than 76%, from 1.5 million last Thanksgiving season to about 350,000 this year. Now the region-by-region roundup, starting with the lower Hudson Valley. The Rockland County Cluster Enforcement Zone, centered on Monsey and Spring Valley, was downgraded to a yellow zone on November 13th, 1 week after Governor Cuomo had switched it from red to orange. Yellow zone rules allow all businesses to operate, with restrictions that include capping public gatherings at 25 and a four-person max per table at restaurants. Schools must randomly test 20% of all people on campus weekly. But we are happy that the governor has again recognized our strong progress. We will continue to all work together so that we can soon be out of the yellow zone as well, unquote, Ramapo Supervisor Michael Specht said November 13th. A total of 7 violations have been issued under the face covering order issued 1 month ago by Rockland Health Commissioner Dr. Patricia Schnabel. All the violations witnessed occurred at Orthodox schools in Monzie, Suffren, and Spring Valley. On November 12th, Lohud.com reported that Congressional Shira Chesed in Ramapo has not yet paid its $4,000 penalty from an April 9th safety violation during the county's crackdown in the pandemic's early days. Putnam County issued 3 health alerts on Thursday and Friday, November 12th and 13th, for anyone who was at the Red Mills Pub or at the Harlan Check Cashing and Financial Services or at the World Gym. In the Mid-Hudson Valley, State Senator James Skoufis addressed the new state mandates in a Facebook post November 13th, saying that the limit on private gatherings of more than 10 people was, quote, largely unenforceable, unquote, and assuring residents that the man would not be going door to door Thanksgiving night, but urging residents to take precautions seriously. As for the limits on late night businesses, Skoufis said he's spoken to countless New Yorkers who have lost loved ones in the pandemic. Quote, I'm sure most, if not all of them, are okay with sacrificing a half hour at their local watering hole if it means protecting their neighbors, unquote. Absentee ballot counting had to be paused in Columbia County after an employee at the Board of Elections was exposed to COVID-19. The employee's husband and child are sick with the virus, and she is currently undergoing testing. The county building closed on November 12th for a deep clean and was expected to reopen this weekend. Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan will convene municipal and county leaders for a special COVID-19 update November 14th at 1:30 p.m. In a Facebook Live briefing on November 12th, Ryan reiterated his warning from earlier in the week about the county nearing a, quote, make-or-break moment. Quote, it is clear now from looking at the data that we are at the beginning of a second wave of COVID-19, unquote, he said. He referenced the distribution of the virus concentrated in the county's south and in the Kingston-Saugerties corridor, saying it was the same pattern as the county saw at the beginning of the first wave. There are currently 358 active cases in the county, the most since mid-June. An outbreak at Pine Bush High School has infected at least 21 students and has been traced to several events, including a gathering at a school board member's house over Halloween weekend. Board member Matthew Watkins pushed back any claims as many as 50 students were at his home, saying the gathering was smaller. The outbreak delayed the beginning of hybrid learning from November 10th to December 1st for 7th through 12th graders in the district. In the Catskills, the Delaware County Board of Supervisors reached a milestone during its meeting this past Tuesday. Every supervisor wore a mask for the first time since reconvening in June, observed the Daily Star. During the meeting, County Health Director Amanda Walsh said her office had seen, quote, large trends, unquote, of cases stemming from in-person dining and workplaces. On November 11th, the county hit an all-time high of 74 known active cases, a little under 1 in 500 county residents. Active cases dipped to 69 on November 13th, although 7 new cases were found, and 4.4% of the county's tests came back positive for the day. 11 are hospitalized. Schoharie County Public Health Director Amy Gildermeister posted a Facebook update on cases in the county November 12th. The county has 23 active cases, she said, but health officials are too overwhelmed with work to give precise figures on the total number of cases in the pandemic so far or on how many county residents are currently hospitalized. Quote, if we can find a moment when our nurses aren't on the phone, we'll try to nail down an actual number for that, unquote, she wrote. An employee at Cassie's Family Diner in Liberty tested positive for COVID-19, Sullivan County reported. And this has been the coronavirus report from the River Newsroom. Go to therivernewsroom.com for more information about any of these stories.
One speeding ticket, Columbia County.
Columbia County, everybody gets speeding tickets. How else do they pay for the roads to get plowed in the winter?
Lost causes from the Confederacy to Trump. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan in our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. President Donald Trump has embarked on a lost cause akin to that embraced by Southerners after the Confederacy was crushed. That historical lost cause falsely posited that the U.S. Civil War was fought not to defend slavery, but rather to preserve states' rights and their cherished Southern way of life. That was a lie. The Confederates were soundly defeated, surrendering unconditionally at Appomattox on April 9, 1865. But the institutions they fought to protect, white supremacy and the brutal oppression of African Americans, continued, shrouded in the false narrative of the lost cause. Trump and Trumpism are its new embodiment, a lost cause embraced by over 70 million voters in this past election. Donald Trump refuses to concede to former Vice President Joe Biden, filing lawsuits challenging Biden's decisive Electoral College lead. And despite losing to Biden in the popular vote by more than 5 million votes and still counting, this week, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo stated,
"There will be a smooth transition to a second Trump administration."
Trump fired his defense secretary and others deemed insufficiently loyal and is packing the Pentagon with yes-men like racist Islamophobe Anthony Tata, who called President Obama a secret Muslim, a Manchurian candidate, and a terrorist leader. Lost amidst the chaos is this simple, inarguable fact. Mass movements drove the historic voter turnout that won the election for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
It is the organizers, the same exact people who have been organizing Black communities around issues that impact us, that mobilized those voters for the Biden-Harris win.
That's Bree Newsom Bass, a North Carolina-based artist and anti-racist activist speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. She has little patience for the bipartisan direction being signaled by the Biden transition team.
The Democratic leadership is simultaneously making the claim that we need to reach across the aisle, we need to engage in bipartisanship with the party that is not acknowledging the election results, the party that just tried to prevent us from having a free and fair election, the party that engaged in rampant voter suppression, a disenfranchisement, and intimidation, and particularly in communities of color, the party that is completely opposed to the idea of our existence, the party that is essentially advocating a form of genocide through medical neglect that has been, ravaging our communities.
In the wake of the 2015 killings of 8 African-American parishioners and their pastor at Charleston, South Carolina's Emmanuel AME Church, Bree Newsom took a brave, defiant stand against systemic racism. The killer was a proud white supremacist who had posted photos of himself with the Confederate battle flag, a racist emblem that still flew on the grounds of the South Carolina state capitol. In the global outpouring of anger and grief following the massacre, Bree Newsom scaled the capitol's 30-foot flagpole as police looked on from below and took down the Confederate flag. After unhooking that flag, Newsom yelled, "You come against me with hatred and oppression and violence. I come against you in the name of God. This flag comes down today."
"You come against me with hatred and oppression and violence. I come against you in the name of God. This flag comes down today."
Bree Newsom was arrested and taken to jail. While the authorities quickly replaced the flag, within weeks, the state legislature voted to remove it permanently. Following the police murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis last May, the global movement against racism and police brutality exploded. Millions of people across racial, class, and generational lines took to the streets. One consistent demand was to defund the police, a phrase denounced by several Democratic Congress members on a post-election conference call who claimed it hurt re-election prospects for Democrats in swing districts.
"We need to understand what defund the police means. Budget your values. Budget your values. That's what it means at the heart of it, right? Why are you spending 60-70% of your municipal budgets on policing when you have education, social services, and the like?"
That's Professor Eddie Glaude. He chairs Princeton University's Department of African American Studies. He was speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
"The reckoning that we find ourselves involves the question of whether or not we're going to fundamentally embrace the idea that we are a multiracial democracy."
The earliest documented use of the phrase lost cause, rebranding the Confederacy as a struggle for Southern culture and states' rights, was in 1866. The lost cause myth propelled more than a century and a half of violence and racism, lynchings, cross burnings, Jim Crow laws, police brutality, and the mass incarceration of people of color. Trump, for the moment, remains president, with immense executive power and an arsenal of weapons at his disposal, all managed by a circle of sycophants eager to do his bidding. If law, tradition, and the popular vote prevail over the next 2 months, Trump will leave or be removed from office on January 20th. Trumpism, however, will remain after he's gone, a new incarnation of the old lost cause of the Confederacy. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 47 degrees. Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low of around 26. And on Sunday, a slight chance of rain and snow before 10 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 50 degrees. And Sunday night, a chance of rain before midnight. It will be mostly cloudy with a low of around 37 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes?
Tomorrow, I'll take a look at swine flu up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
You have tuned into the River Newsroom's Hudson Valley Coronavirus Report from Lissa Harris of The River and Roger Hennigan-Gilson of The Other Hudson Valley. Go to theotherhudsonvalley.com or therivernewsroom.com for more information and links to the stories included here. This report is a collaboration with several Hudson Valley journalists, airing on WGXC 90.7 FM at midnight, 5, 7, and 9 a.m., and online in the audio archives at WGXC.org. La Voz, a Spanish-language news magazine covering the Hudson Valley, is translating these roundups and co-publishing them on its website in Spanish at lavoz.bard.edu.
On November 13th, President Donald Trump broke a week-long public silence to hold a press conference in the Rose Garden, where he threatened to withhold a coronavirus vaccine from the state of New York. Trump's comments were aimed at Governor Andrew Cuomo, who has been a vocal critic of the White House's plan for vaccine distribution, as well as the administration's efforts to interfere with decision-making at the FDA, the agency that regulates all vaccines and pharmaceuticals. Quote, as soon as April, the vaccine will be available to the entire general population, with the exception of places like New York State, where, for political reasons, the governor decided to say, and I don't think it's good politically. I think it's very bad from a health standpoint, but he wants to take his time on the vaccine, unquote, Trump said. Cuomo promptly fired back on CNN and MSNBC, accusing the president of wildly misrepresenting his stance on the vaccine effort, while New York State Attorney General Letitia James vowed to sue the Trump administration if New York sees a delay in vaccine access. Trump will not be president in April, of course, barring the overturning of the U.S. system of government as we know it. New York Times took an in-depth look at this week at Pfizer's plans to distribute the vaccine. Federal distribution plans for the vaccine have been a key target of Cuomo's recent attacks. And the governor has said that the White House plan will leave low-income communities of color behind. The fact that the Pfizer vaccine is currently the front-runner complicates the picture. The company refused to take federal money from Operation Warp Speed to develop the vaccine, leaving it in a more independent position than other vaccine makers. Pfizer intends to take charge of much of its own complicated distribution, although they plan to work closely with Operation Warp Speed and with state and local governments to get that vaccine to the general population. In late October, New York State quietly put out a report on its pandemic rent relief program intended to prevent evictions and help low-income renters who are struggling to stay afloat through the pandemic. Took a while, but the report is now making headlines. Curbed writes that the program was a bust, reaching only 15,000 people and putting only $40 million of the state's $100 million program funding toward rent relief. The problem is that eligibility restrictions were so tight that most of the 94,000 people who applied to the state for relief were turned away. Quote, the result was a program that provided help for an excruciatingly small slice of New Yorkers. More than 1.3 million statewide are at risk of eviction, when the true need is staggering, unquote, Curbed writes. The city, a New York City-based digital news outlet, is looking to get in touch with people who sought help from the program. Dinner parties and casual game nights are currently driving much of the U.S. COVID-19 transmission, the Washington Post reports. Contact tracers are now tracing cases back to small private gatherings, as larger ones have been scaled back. COVID-19 is increasingly being driven by a form of spread that is almost impossible to detect or enforce against. quote, the kitchen table is a place of risk, unquote, said Nirav Shah, director of Maine's Center for Disease Control and Prevention. New York's new prohibition against multi-household gatherings of more than 10 people in a home goes into effect November 13th, joining neighboring states that have already instituted such bans. New York City schools are on the brink of shutting down again as the city's positivity rate nears a 3% threshold for closure set by city officials this summer after intense negotiation with teachers' unions. Epidemiologists increasingly agree school is not as dangerous a setting as, for instance, indoor dining. Some public health experts are asking why we are closing schools and keeping indoor dining open. The answer might make sense from one angle. Restaurant workers don't get paid when restaurants close, while teachers can still work remotely. But it isn't being driven by science. The governors of six northeastern states, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, and Vermont, will meet over the weekend to attempt to coordinate their response to the pandemic's second wave. The governors will discuss expanding restrictions on businesses and gatherings, as well as possibly coordinating on travel restrictions, Governor Cuomo said November 13th. We need to look beyond beds. Healthcare workers are burning out as the nation's third wave of cases overwhelms hospitals in many places. The Atlantic's Ed Young reports in a sobering feature story, quote, the most precious resource the U.S. healthcare system has is in the struggle against COVID-19 isn't some miracle drug. It's the expertise of healthcare workers, and they are exhausted, unquote, Young writes. Public health policy expert Diana Mason, a Catskills resident who hosts a health-themed radio show on Roxbury's public radio station WIOX, writes for the Journal of the American Medical Association that with cases on the rise, it is time for the medical profession to grapple with tough decisions about rationing care. The state's chief administrative judge called off the convening of all new juries and grand juries starting this coming Monday, November 16th, and grand juries on pending cases will continue to meet. More than 130 Secret Service members are currently infected with COVID-19 or quarantining due to exposure at various Trump campaign events, the Washington Post reported on November 13th. Quote, the virus is having a dramatic impact on the Secret Service's Presidential Security Unit at the same time that growing numbers of prominent Trump campaign allies and White House officials have fallen ill in the wake of campaign events where many attendees did not wear masks, unquote, the paper writes. The state's new limits on household gatherings, restaurants, and gym hours went into effect November 13th. Beginning November 14th, you'll no longer see toll booth workers on the thruway. But that's not because of the pandemic. Rather, the state has completed a three-year, $355 million project to transition the superhighway system from toll booths to an entirely cashless payment system. The completion date of the switchover had been thrown up in the air by the state's budget deficit this year due to the pandemic. At least 5 million fewer people will travel this Thanksgiving in the United States, according to AAA. The number of travelers on the road is expected to drop more than 4%. The number flying is expected to drop more than 47%. And the number traveling by other means, such as train or cruise ship, is expected to drop more than 76%, from 1.5 million last Thanksgiving season to about 350,000 this year. Now the region-by-region roundup, starting with the lower Hudson Valley. The Rockland County Cluster Enforcement Zone, centered on Monsey and Spring Valley, was downgraded to a yellow zone on November 13th, 1 week after Governor Cuomo had switched it from red to orange. Yellow zone rules allow all businesses to operate, with restrictions that include capping public gatherings at 25 and a four-person max per table at restaurants. Schools must randomly test 20% of all people on campus weekly. But we are happy that the governor has again recognized our strong progress. We will continue to all work together so that we can soon be out of the yellow zone as well, unquote, Ramapo Supervisor Michael Specht said November 13th. A total of seven violations have been issued under the face covering order issued 1 month ago by Rockland Health Commissioner Dr. Patricia Schnabel. All the violations witnessed occurred at Orthodox schools in Monsey, Suffern, and Spring Valley. On November 12th, LowHUD.com reported that Congressional Shira Chesed in Ramapo has not yet paid its $4,000 penalty from an April 9th safety violation during the county's crackdown in the pandemic's early days. Putnam County issued three health alerts on Thursday and Friday, November 12th and 13th, for anyone who was at the Red Mills Pub or at the Harlan Check Cashing and Financial Services or at the World Gym. In the Mid-Hudson Valley, State Senator James Skoufis addressed